I imagine there are many openings to the surface, and we needn't find the one we entered. But we don't know where any of the openings are. How do we find them? Trevise turned again to Bliss. Can you detect anything mentally that will help us find our way out? Bliss said, The robots on this estate are all inactive. I can detect a thin whisper of subintelligent life straight up, but all that tells us is that the surface is straight up, which we know. Well then, said Trevise, we'll just have to look for some opening. Hit and miss, said Pellerat, appalled. We'll never succeed. We might, Janoff, said Trevise. If we search, there will be a chance, however small. The alternative is simply to stay here, and if we do that, then we will never succeed. Come, a small chance is better than none.
Wait, said Bliss. I do sense something.
What? Said Trevise.
A mind.
Intelligence?
Yes, but limited, I think. What reaches me most clearly, though, is something else.
What? Said Trevise, again fighting impatience.
Fright. Intolerable fright, said Bliss in a whisper.
53. Trevise looked about ruefully. He knew where they had entered, but he had no illusion on the score of being able to retrace the path by which they had come. He had, after all, paid little attention to the turnings and windings. Who would have thought they'd be in the position of having to retrace the route alone and without help, and with only a flickering dim light to be guided by? He said, Do you think you can activate the car, Bliss? Bliss said,
I'm sure I could, Trevise, but that doesn't mean I can run it.
Pellerat said, I think that Bander ran it mentally. I didn't see it touch anything when it was moving. Bliss said gently,
Yes, it did it mentally, Pell, but how mentally? You might as well say that it did it by using the controls. Certainly, but if I don't know the details of using the controls, that doesn't help, does it?
You might try, said Trevise.
If I try, I'll have to put my whole mind to it, and if I do that, then I doubt that I'll be able to keep the lights on. The car will do us no good in the dark, even if I learn how to control it.
Then we must wander about on foot, I suppose.
I'm afraid so.
Trevise peered at the thick and gloomy darkness that lay beyond the dim light in their immediate neighborhood. He saw nothing, heard nothing. He said, Bliss, do you still sense this frightened mind?
Yes, I do.
Can you tell where it is? Can you guide us to it?
The mental sense is a straight line. It is not refracted sensibly by ordinary matter, so I can tell it is coming from that direction.
She pointed to a spot on the dusky wall and said,
But we can't walk through the wall to it. The best we can do is follow the corridors and try to find our way in whatever direction will keep the sensation growing stronger. In short, we will have to play the game of hot and cold.
Then let's start right now. Pellerat hung back. Wait, Golan. Are we sure we want to find this thing, whatever it is? If it is frightened, it may be that we will have reason to be frightened, too.
Trevise shook his head impatiently. We have no choice, Janoff. It's a mind, frightened or not, and it may be willing to, or may be made, to direct us to the surface.
And do we just leave Bander lying here? Said Pellerat uneasily.
Trevise took his elbow. Come, Janoff, we have no choice in that either. Eventually some Solarian will reactivate the place, and a robot will find Bander and take care of it. I hope not before we are safely away. He allowed Bliss to lead the way. The light was always strongest in her immediate neighborhood, and she paused at each doorway, at each fork in the corridor, trying to sense the direction from which the fright came. Sometimes she would walk through a door, or move around a curve, then come back and try an alternate path, while Trevise watched helplessly. Each time Bliss came to a decision and moved firmly in a particular direction, the light came on ahead of her. Trevise noticed that it seemed a bit brighter now, either because his eyes were adapting to the dimness, or because Bliss was learning how to handle the transduction more efficiently. At one point, when she passed one of the metal rods that were inserted into the ground, she put her hand on it, and the lights brightened noticeably. She nodded her head as though she were pleased with herself. Nothing looked in the least familiar. It seemed certain they were wandering through portions of the rambling underground mansion they had not passed through on the way in. Trevise kept looking for corridors that led upward sharply, and he varied that by studying the ceilings for any sign of a trapdoor. Nothing of the sort appeared, and the frightened mind remained their only chance of getting out. They walked through silence, except for the sound of their own steps. Through darkness, except for the light in their immediate vicinity. Through death, except for their own lives. Occasionally, they made out the shadowy bulk of a robot, sitting or standing in the dusk with no motion. Once, they saw a robot lying on its side, with legs and arms in queer, frozen positions. It had been caught off balance, Trevise thought, at the moment when power had been turned off, and it had fallen. Bander, either alive or dead, could not affect the force of gravity. Perhaps all over the vast Bander estate, robots were standing and lying inactive, and it would be that would quickly be noted at the borders. Or perhaps not, he thought suddenly. Solarians would know when one of their number would be dying of old age and physical decay. The world would be alerted and ready. Bander, however, had died suddenly, without possible foreknowledge in the prime of its existence. Who would know? Who would expect? Who would be watching for inactivation? But no, and Trevise thrust back optimism and consolation as dangerous lures into overconfidence. The Solarians would note the cessation of all activity on the Bander estate and take action at once. They all had too great an interest in the succession to estates to leave death to itself. Pellaret murmured unhappily, "Ventilation has stopped. A place like this, underground, must be ventilated, and Bander supplied the power. Now it has stopped." "It doesn't matter, Janoff," said Trevise. "We've got enough air down in this empty underground place to last us for years." "It's close, just the same. It's psychologically bad." "Please, Janoff, don't get claustrophobic. Bliss, are we any closer?" "Much, Trevise," she replied. "The sensation is stronger, and I am clearer as to its location." She was stepping forward more surely, hesitating less at points of choice of direction. "There, there," she said. "I can sense it intensely." Trevise said dryly, "Even I can hear it now." All three stopped and automatically held their breaths. They could hear a soft moaning, interspersed with gasping sobs. They walked into a large room, and as the lights went on, they saw that, unlike all those they had hitherto seen, it was rich and colorful in furnishings. In the center of the room was a robot, stooping slightly, its arms stretched out in what seemed an almost affectionate gesture, and, of course, it was absolutely motionless. Behind the robot was a flutter of garments. A round, frightened eye edged to one side of it, and there was still the sound of a broken-hearted sobbing. Trevise darted around the robot,
and from the other side a small figure shot out, shrieking. It stumbled, fell to the ground, and lay there, covering its eyes, kicking its legs in all directions as though to ward off some threat from whatever angle it might approach, and shrieking, shrieking. Bliss said, quite unnecessarily, "It's a child." 54. Trevise drew back, puzzled. What was a child doing here? Bander had been so proud of its absolute solitude, so insistent upon it. Pellerat, less apt to fall back on iron reasoning in the face of an obscure event, seized upon the solution at once and said, "I suppose this is the successor." "Bander's child," said Bliss, agreeing. "But too young, I think, to be a successor. The Solarians will have to find one elsewhere." She was gazing at the child, not in a fixed glare, but in a soft, mesmerizing way. And slowly the noise the child was making lessened. It opened its eyes and looked at Bliss in return. Its outcry was reduced to an occasional soft whimper. Bliss made sounds of her own now, soothing ones, broken words that made little sense in themselves, but were meant only to reinforce the calming effect of her thoughts. It was as though she were mentally fingering the child's unfamiliar mind and seeking to even out its disheveled emotions. Slowly, never taking its eyes off Bliss, the child got to its feet, stood there swaying a moment, then made a dash for the silent, frozen robot. It threw its arms about the sturdy robotic leg, as though avid for the security of its touch. Trevise said, "I suppose that the robot is its nursemaid or caretaker. I suppose a Solarian can't care for another Solarian, not even a parent for a child." Pellerat said, "And I suppose the child is hermaphroditic." "It would have to be," said Trevise. Bliss, still entirely preoccupied with the child, was approaching it slowly, hands held half upward, palms toward herself, as though emphasizing that there was no intention of seizing the small creature. The child was now silent, watching the approach, and holding on the more tightly to the robot. Bliss said, "There, child. Warm, child. Soft, warm, comfortable. Safe, child. Safe. Safe." She stopped, and without looking around, said in a low voice, "Pell, speak to it in its language. Tell it we're robots come to take care of it because the power failed."
"Robots?" said Pellerat, shocked.
"We must be presented as robots. It's not afraid of robots, and it's never seen a human being. Maybe can't even conceive of them."
Pellerat said, "I don't know if I can think of the right expression. I don't know the archaic word for robot."
"Say robot, then, Pell. If that doesn't work, say iron thing. Say whatever you can."
Slowly, word by word, Pellerat spoke archaically. The child looked at him, frowning intensely, as though trying to understand. Trevise said, "You might as well ask it how to get out while you're at it." Bliss said,
"No, not yet. Confidence first, then information."
The child, looking now at Pellerat, slowly released its hold on the robot and spoke in a high-pitched musical voice. Pellerat said anxiously, "It's speaking too quickly for me." Bliss said,
"Ask it to repeat more slowly. I'm doing my best to calm it and remove its fears."
Pellerat, listening again to the child, said, "I think it's asking what made Jemby stop. Jembe must be the robot.
Check and make sure, Pell.
Pellerat spoke, then listened, and said, Yes, Jembe is the robot. The child calls itself Phallum.
Good.
Bliss smiled at the child, a luminous, happy smile, pointed to it and said,
Phallum. Good Phallum. Brave Phallum.
She placed a hand on her chest and said,
Bliss.
The child smiled. It looked very attractive when it smiled.
Bliss,
it said, hissing the S a bit imperfectly. Trevise said, Bliss, if you can activate the robot Jembe, it might be able to tell us what we want to know. Pellerat can speak to it as easily as to the child.
No, said Bliss. That would be wrong. The robot's first duty is to protect the child. If it is activated and instantly becomes aware of us, aware of strange human beings, it may as instantly attack us. No strange human beings belong here. If I am then forced to inactivate it, it can give us no information, and the child, faced with a second inactivation of the only parent it knows, well, I just won't do it.
But we were told, said Pellerat mildly, that robots can't harm human beings.
So we were, said Bliss. But we were not told what kind of robots these Solarians have designed. And even if this robot were designed to do no harm, it would have to make a choice between its child, or the nearest thing to a child it can have, and three objects whom it might not even recognize as human beings, merely as illegal intruders. Naturally, it would choose the child and attack us.
She turned to the child again.
Phallum, she said. Bliss.
She pointed.
Pell. Trev. Pell. Trev, said the child obediently.
She came closer to the child, her hands reaching toward it slowly. It watched her, then took a step backward.
Calm, Phallum, said Bliss. Good, Phallum. Touch, Phallum. Nice, Phallum.
It took a step toward her, and Bliss sighed.
Good, Phallum.
She touched Phallum's bare arm, for it wore, as its parent had, only a long robe, open in front, and with a loincloth beneath. The touch was gentle. She removed her arm, waited, and made contact again, stroking softly. The child's eyes half closed under the strong, calming effect of Bliss's mind. Bliss's hands moved up slowly, softly, scarcely touching, to the child's shoulders, its neck, its ears, then under its long brown hair to a point just above and behind its ears. Her hands dropped away then, and she said,
The transducer lobes are still small. The cranial bone hasn't developed yet. There's just a tough layer of skin there, which will eventually expand outward and be fenced in with bone after the lobes have fully grown, which means it can't at the present time control the estate, or even activate its own personal robot. Ask it how old it is, Pell.
Pellerat said, after an exchange, It's 14 years old, if I understand it rightly. Trevise said, It looks more like 11. Bliss said,
The length of the years used on this world may not correspond closely to standard galactic years. Besides, spacers are supposed to have extended lifetimes, and if the Solarians are like the other spacers in this, they may also have extended developmental periods. We can't go by years after all.
Trevise said, with an impatient click of his tongue, "Enough anthropology. We must get to the surface, and since we are dealing with the child, we may be wasting our time uselessly. It may not know the route to the surface. It may not ever have been on the surface." Bliss said, "Pell..." Pellerat knew what she meant, and there followed the longest conversation he had yet had with Phalum. Finally, he said, "The child knows what the sun is. It says it's seen it. I think it's seen trees." It didn't act as though it were sure what the word meant, or at least what the word I used meant. "Yes, Janoff," said Trevise, "but do get to the point." "I told Phalum that if it could get us out to the surface, that might make it possible for us to activate the robot. Actually, I said, we would activate the robot. Do you suppose we might?" Trevise said, "We'll worry about that later. Did it say it would guide us?" "Yes. I thought the child would be more anxious to do it, you see, if I made that promise. I suppose we're running the risk of disappointing it." "Come," said Trevise, "let's get started. All this will be academic if we are caught underground." Pellerat said something to the child, who began to walk, then stopped and looked back at Bliss. Bliss held out her hand, and the two then walked hand in hand. "I'm the new robot," she said, smiling slightly. "It seems reasonably happy over that," said Trevise. Phalum skipped along, and briefly Trevise wondered if it were happy simply because Bliss had labored to make it so, or if, added to that, there was the excitement of visiting the surface and of having three new robots, or whether it was excitement at the thought of having its Jembe foster parent back. Not that it mattered, as long as the child led them. There seemed no hesitation in the child's progress. It turned without pause whenever there was a choice of paths. Did it really know where it was going, or was it all simply a matter of a child's indifference? Was it simply playing a game with no clear end in sight? But Trevise was aware from the slight burden on his progress that he was moving uphill, and the child, bouncing self-importantly forward, was pointing ahead and chattering. Trevise looked at Pellerat, who cleared his throat and said, "I think what it's saying is doorway." "I hope your thought is correct," said Trevise. The child broke away from Bliss and was running now. It pointed to a portion of the flooring that seemed darker than the sections immediately neighboring it. The child stepped on it, jumping up and down a few times, and then turned with a clear expression of dismay and spoke with shrill volubility. Bliss said with a grimace, "I'll have to supply the power. This is wearing me out." Her face reddened a bit and the lights dimmed, but a door opened just ahead of Phalum, who laughed in soprano delight. The child ran out the door, and the two men followed. Bliss came last, and looked back as the lights just inside darkened and the door closed. She then paused to catch her breath, looking rather worn out. "Well," said Pellerat, "we're out. Where's the ship?" All of them stood bathed in the still luminous twilight. Trevise muttered, "It seems to me that it was in that direction." "It seems so to me, too," said Bliss. "Let's walk." And she held out her hand to Phalum. There was no sound, except those produced by the wind and by the motions and calls of living animals. At one point they passed a robot standing motionless near the base of a tree, holding some object of uncertain purpose.
Pellerat took a step toward it out of apparent curiosity, but Treviz said,
"Not our business, Genoff. Move on."
They passed another robot at a greater distance who had tumbled.
Treviz said, "There are robots littered over many kilometers in all directions, I suppose."
And then, triumphantly,
"Ah, there's the ship."
They hastened their steps now, then stopped suddenly. Phalum raised its voice in an excited squeak. On the ground near the ship was what appeared to be an air vessel of primitive design, with a rotor that looked energy wasteful and fragile besides. Standing next to the air vessel, and between the little party of outworlders and their ship, stood four human figures.
"Too late," said Treviz. "We wasted too much time. Now what?"
Pellerette said wonderingly,
"Four Solarians? It can't be. Surely they wouldn't come into physical contact like that. Do you suppose those are holo images?"
"They are thoroughly material," said Bliss. "I'm sure of that. They're not Solarians either. There's no mistaking the minds. They're robots."
55.
"Well then," said Treviz wearily, "onward." He resumed his walk toward the ship at a calm pace, and the others followed. Pellerat said rather breathlessly,
"What do you intend to do?"
"If they're robots, they've got to obey orders." The robots were awaiting them, and Treviz watched them narrowly as they came closer. Yes, they must be robots. Their faces, which looked as though they were made of skin underlain with flesh, were curiously expressionless. They were dressed in uniforms that exposed no square centimeter of skin outside the face. Even the hands were covered by thin, opaque gloves. Treviz gestured casually, in a fashion that was unquestionably a brusque request that they step aside. The robots did not move. In a low voice, Treviz said to Pellerat,
"Put it into words, Genoff. Be firm."
Pellerat cleared his throat, and putting an unaccustomed baritone into his voice, spoke slowly, gesturing them aside, much as Treviz had done. At that, one of the robots, who was perhaps a shade taller than the rest, said something in a cold and incisive voice. Pellerat turned to Treviz.
"I think," he said, "we were outworlders."
"Tell him we are human beings and must be obeyed." The robot spoke then, in peculiar but understandable Galactic.
"I understand you, outworlder. I speak Galactic. We are guardian robots."
"Then you have heard me say that we are human beings, and that you must therefore obey us."
"We are programmed to obey rulers only, outworlder. You are not rulers, and not Solarian. Ruler Bander has not responded to the normal moment of contact,
and we have come to investigate at close quarters. It is our duty to do so. We find a spaceship not of Solarian manufacture, several outworlders present, and all Bander robots inactivated. Where is Ruler Bander?"
Treviz shook his head and said slowly and distinctly,
"We know nothing of what you say. Our ship's computer is not working well. We found ourselves near this strange planet against our intentions. We landed to find our location. We found all robots inactivated. We know nothing of what might have happened."
"That is not a credible account. If all robots on the estate are inactivated and all power is off, Ruler Bander must be dead. It is not logical to suppose that, by coincidence, it died just as you landed. There must be some sort of causal connection."
Treviz said with no set purpose but to confuse the issue and to indicate his own foreigner's lack of understanding and therefore his innocence, "But the power is not off.
You and the others are active.
The robot said, We are guardian robots. We do not belong to any ruler. We belong to all the world. We are not ruler-controlled, but are nuclear-powered. I ask again, where is Ruler Bander?
Treviz looked about him. Pellerat appeared anxious. Bliss was tight-lipped, but calm. Phelim was trembling. But Bliss's hand touched the child's shoulder, and it stiffened somewhat and lost facial expression. Was Bliss sedating it? The robot said, Once again, and for the last time, where is Ruler Bander?
I do not know, said Treviz grimly. The robot nodded, and two of his companions left quickly. The robot said, My fellow guardians will search the mansion. Meanwhile, you will be held for questioning. Hand me those objects you wear at your side.
Treviz took a step backward. They are harmless.
Do not move again. I do not question their nature, whether harmful or harmless. I ask for them.
No.
The robot took a quick step forward, and his arm flashed out too quickly for Treviz to realize what was happening. The robot's hand was on his shoulder. The grip tightened and pushed downward. Treviz went to his knees.
The robot said, Those objects. It held out its other hand.
No, gasped Treviz.
Bliss lunged forward, pulled the blaster out of its holster before Treviz, clamped in the robot's grip, could do anything to prevent her, and held it out toward the robot.
Here, guardian, she said. And if you'll give me a moment, here's the other. Now, release my companion.
The robot, holding both weapons, stepped back, and Treviz rose slowly to his feet, rubbing his left shoulder vigorously, face wincing with pain. Phelim whimpered softly, and Pellerat picked it up in distraction and held it tightly. Bliss said to Treviz in a furious whisper,
Why are you fighting him? He can kill you with two fingers.
Treviz groaned and said between gritted teeth, Why don't you handle him?
I'm trying to. It takes time. His mind is tight, intensely programmed, and leaves no handle. I must study it. You play for time.
Don't study his mind. Just destroy it, said Treviz almost soundlessly. Bliss looked quickly toward the robot. It was studying the weapons intently, while the one other robot that still remained with it watched the outworlders. Neither seemed interested in the whispering that was going on between Treviz and Bliss.
Bliss said, No, no destruction. We killed one dog and hurt another on the first world. You know what happened on this world.
Another quick glance at the guardian robots.
Gaia does not needlessly butcher life or intelligence. I need time to work it out peacefully.
She stepped back and stared at the robot fixedly. The robot said, These are weapons.
No, said Treviz.
Yes, said Bliss, but they are no longer useful. They are drained of energy.
Is that indeed so? Why should you carry weapons that are drained of energy? Perhaps they are not drained.
The robot held one of the weapons in its fist and placed its thumb accurately.
Is this the way it is activated?
Yes, said Bliss. If you tighten the pressure, it would be activated if it contained energy, but it does not.
Is that certain?
The robot pointed the weapon at Treviz.
Do you still say that if I activate it now, it will not work?
It will not work, said Bliss.
Treviz was frozen in place and unable to articulate.
He had tested the blaster after Bander had drained it, and it was totally dead. But the robot was holding the neuronic whip. Trevise had not tested that. If the whip contained even a small residue of energy, there would be enough for a stimulation of the pain nerves, and what Trevise would feel would make the grip of the robot's hand seem to have been a pat of affection. When he had been at the Naval Academy, Trevise had been forced to take a mild neuronic whip blow, as all cadets had had to. That was just to know what it was like. Trevise felt no need to know anything more. The robot activated the weapon, and for a moment Trevise stiffened painfully, and then slowly relaxed. The whip, too, was thoroughly drained. The robot stared at Trevise and then tossed both weapons to one side. "How do these come to be drained of energy?" it demanded. "If they are of no use, why do you carry them?" Trevise said, "I am accustomed to the weight and carry them even when drained." The robot said, "That does not make sense. You are all under custody. You will be held for further questioning. And if the rulers so decide, you will then be inactivated. How does one open this ship? We must search it." "It will do you no good," said Trevise. "You won't understand it." "If not I, the rulers will understand." "They will not understand either." "Then you will explain so that they will understand." "I will not." "Then you will be inactivated." "My inactivation will give you no explanation, and I think I will be inactivated even if I explain." Bliss muttered, "Keep it up. I'm beginning to unravel the workings of its brain." The robot ignored Bliss. Did she see to that, thought Trevise, and hoped savagely that she had. Keeping its attention firmly on Trevise, the robot said, "If you make difficulties, then we will partially inactivate you. We will damage you, and you will then tell us what we want to know." Suddenly, Pellerat called out in a half-strangled cry, "Wait! You cannot do this! Guardian, you cannot do this!" "I am under detailed instructions," said the robot quietly. "I can do this. Of course, I shall do as little damage as is consistent with obtaining information." "But you cannot. Not at all. I am an outworlder, and so are these two companions of mine. But this child," and Pellerat looked at Phalum, whom he was still carrying, "is a Solarian. It will tell you what to do, and you must obey it." Phalum looked at Pellerat with eyes that were open, but seemed empty. Bliss shook her head sharply, but Pellerat looked at her without any sign of understanding. The robot's eyes rested briefly on Phalum. It said, "The child is of no importance. It does not have transducer lobes." "It does not yet have fully developed transducer lobes," said Pellerat, panting. "But it will have them in time. It is a Solarian child." "It is a child, but without fully developed transducer lobes, it is not a Solarian. I am not compelled to follow its orders or to keep it from harm." "But it is the offspring of Ruler Bander."
"Is it? How do you come to know that?"
Pellerat stuttered, as he sometimes did when over-earnest.
"Well, what other child would be on this estate?"
"How do you know there aren't a dozen?"
"Have you seen any others?"
"It is I who will ask the questions."
At this moment, the robot's attention shifted as the second robot touched its arm. The two robots who had been sent to the mansion were returning at a rapid run that, nevertheless, had a certain irregularity to it. There was silence till they arrived, and then one of them spoke in the Solarian language,
at which all four of the robots seemed to lose their elasticity. For a moment, they appeared to wither, almost to deflate. Pellerat said, "They've found Bander," before Trevise could wave him silent. The robot turned slowly and said, in a voice that slurred the syllables, "Ruler Bander is dead. By the remark you have just made, you show us you were aware of the fact. How did that come to be?" "How can I know?" said Trevise defiantly. "You knew it was dead. You knew it was there to be found. How could you know that unless you had been there, unless it was you that had ended the life?" The robot's enunciation was already improving. It had endured and was absorbing the shock. Then Trevise said, "How could we have killed Bander? With its transducer lobes, it could have destroyed us in a moment." "How do you know what or what not transducer lobes could do?" "You mentioned the transducer lobes just now." "I did no more than mention them. I did not describe their properties or abilities. The knowledge came to us in a dream." "That is not a credible answer." Trevise said, "To suppose that we have caused the death of Bander is not credible either." Pellerat added, "And in any case, if Ruler Bander is dead, then Ruler Phalum now controls this estate." "Here the ruler is, and it is it whom you must obey." "I have already explained," said the robot, "that an offspring with undeveloped transducer lobes is not a Solarian. It cannot be a successor. Therefore, another successor of the appropriate age will be flown in as soon as we report this sad news." "What of Ruler Phalum?" "There is no Ruler Phalum. There is only a child, and we have an excess of children. It will be destroyed." Bliss said forcefully, "You dare not! It is a child!" "It is not I," said the robot, "who will necessarily do the act, and it is certainly not I who will make the decision. That is for the consensus of the rulers. In times of child excess, however, I know well what the decision will be." "No, I say no." "It will be painless. But another ship is coming. It is important that we go into what was the Bander Mansion and set up a holovision council that will supply a successor and decide on what to do with you. Give me the child." Bliss snatched the semi-comatose figure of Phalum from Pellerat. Holding it tightly and trying to balance its weight on her shoulder, she said, "Do not touch this child." Once again, the robot's arm shot out swiftly, and it stepped forward, reaching for Phalum. Bliss moved quickly to one side, beginning her motion well before the robot had begun its own. The robot continued to move forward, however, as though Bliss were still standing before it. Curving stiffly downward, with the forward tips of its feet as the pivot, it went down on its face. The other three stood motionless, eyes unfocused. Bliss was sobbing, partly with rage. "I almost had the proper method of control, and it wouldn't give me the time. I had no choice but to strike, and now all four are inactivated. Let's get on the ship before the other ship lands. I am too ill to face additional robots now."